comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. We're here because you have a right to know, and we're here because you matter. This show is, I think most people are aware, but perhaps our newer listeners are not, this show is listener-supported. Now, what that means is that you will notice that there is an absence of something during the show, the absence of ads. We don't play ads on the show. So the only way that this show can stay in business and continue broadcasting and continue to keep bringing you guests and information like we will tonight, like we do every night, is for you, our listeners, to join with us in the effort. And it's always free to listen if you want to listen to the show, but there are some extra benefits if you join our members area, if you become a supporter of the show. It's only $6.95 to do that. 23 cents a day. It's even cheaper if you go quarterly, and cheaper yet if you go annually. But for one thing, you get to watch the show. So if you're listening tonight and you say, well, you know, I'd kind of like to watch the show, well, become a member tonight. All right. So all the live shows are broadcast live on our private TV channel online, and you could be watching the show with a bunch of other folks here tonight. But that's not all you get. Let's say you miss the show and you're saying, ah, doggone it, I wish I hadn't missed that show. I wanted to see that show, or I wanted to hear that show. Well, to see it, as soon as we finish tonight, we'll upload this show. We capture it, we upload it, and it's up there for 24 hours so you can watch the latest show. And each and every show we turn into a podcast, and that means we take out all the commercial breaks, but there are no commercials anyway. But we take those out, and what happens is we upload those into our archives called the K-Pods. And, you know, you can listen to the latest show, or you can watch the latest show. You also get your own profile page. You get your own photo gallery, friends page, your own blog. The Video Galaxy, a library of free ebooks for you to download. And so much, much more. Chat. We have a chat room. Forums. We have great forums. And all of that for 23 cents a day. Come on, that's nothing. Take 23 cents to the store and see if they will sell you something for 20. For 23 cents at the store, they'll give you instructions to the exit. Okay? But you get a world of experiences and information for that 23 cents here at the Kevin Smith Show. So join our community of members and help support the show and enjoy all the benefits of being a member. We will be back right after this break, and my guest this evening is Dr. Jack Pruitt. Right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Dr. Jack Pruitt is my guest this evening. He runs a small medical clinic in rural Texas and used to be a medical partner of Congressman Ron Paul. He has spent many years studying the works of Zechariah Sitchin, the Bible, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and various religious and spiritual writings and documents. He's reached his own conclusions about the origins of the universe and the nature of existence here on Earth. They do not represent the opinions of Zechariah Sitchin or of anyone else, but I will tell you this. He's put them into a book called The Grandest Deception, and I think probably since the writings of Sitchin, nothing else has caused a sort of philosophical earthquake and upheaval among the status quo quite like this book is doing. Dr. Jack Pruitt, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. It is an honor to be with you and my pleasure.
Dr. Pruitt, we're not hearing you quite as well as we did when we did the sound check before the show. It sounds like you're far from your microphone. But
is this better?
That is better. Okay, when I talked with you prior to this show, you described some things for me that were, I have to say, the sort of thing that, number one, is outright controversial, which, number two, means it's probably either true or really, really close to true. Three, you told me some things that are pretty much in line with what I have written about and what I have talked about, which are very controversial. In a thumbnail sketch, let's get the gist of the grandest deception. But before you do that, let me say something I forgot to say. If you click Dr. Jack Pruitt's picture on my website, that will take you to his webpage, all right? It will automatically open up his webpage. So it is linked, and you may want to check that out. So let's start with a thumbnail description of The Grandest Deception. What's it about?
Well, allow me first just to say that I was not aware of your book until we did speak earlier, and I'm anxious to read it.
Well, I will send you an electronic copy of it, and you'll be able to do that.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Actually, my book is based on the works of Zechariah Sitchin and the Bible. And I heard about Zechariah Sitchin first only about 6 years ago. Happened to be driving one night, heard him on the radio, did an interview, and bought The 12th Planet, his book, this morning, read it, and stepped reading up his book and studying the thing that I admire most about Sitchin, I think, is that Sitchin had a good scientific mind, and I think did a very good job of documenting his discoveries and evidence so that if one were inclined to take the time and trouble, you could go to his works and try for yourself whether he was correct or incorrect. And that is precisely one of the things that has always bothered me about the Bible. According to the Bible, I'm supposed to accept many things based on faith that, quite frankly, patently absurd.
Dr. Pruitt, I hate to interrupt you, but I don't know what's happened to your audio. We're getting about every other syllable. And really, it's disruptive enough that we can't even tell what you're telling us.
I'm getting a strange echo back myself.
Yes, you need to turn your volume down. Your Skype volume. Turn your Skype volume down, and that will help. And this, folks, by the way, is one of the reasons many of you have urged me over the years to use Skype. This is one of the reasons I resisted, as you're experiencing tonight. It's good when it works, but sometimes it's really strange, and it's because it depends on the conditions out there on the internet at the time, at the moment. That's why it does that. Okay, we'll give it a try. If that doesn't work, we will connect with you by telephone, and we'll go from there.
All right. Is this better?
So far, it's better, yeah.
Okay. Perhaps I should start over.
Yes, let's do that.
Okay. Well, my book is based on the works of Zechariah Sitchin and the Bible, other scripture material. The thing that I admire most about Sitchin was the fact that I think he did a good job documenting his discoveries and the evidence that he found, so that if one were to find, could go verify for themselves that he was correct or incorrect. Okay. And during my many years of studying the Bible, that precisely something disturbing about it in many years. And that simply that I was supposed to accept on faith many things that frankly are just patently absurd.
All right, I'll tell you what. Your Skype and our Skype are fighting each other. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to give you a call on the telephone, and we will do this via telephone, and I think we'll get much better results. But
yes.
Let's give that a try. Your telephone should be ringing now.
Okay.
Hello?
Oh, yes, that's much better, and we shall now discontinue Skype. Yeah, now we're just on telephone, and that's much better. So you can cut your Skype off. Skype is out of business tonight, folks. All right. And so please, for all of you who want to be guests, and you do encourage me to use Skype, it was my idea to use it tonight, but please understand, that's why Skype is not very often a good thing for broadcasting. Okay, so you saw things in after you read Sitchin, you started noticing things, and you saw things that in the Bible that you said didn't make a lot of sense to you. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, give us an example. What are we talking about that didn't make sense to you?
Well, there are many, but one thing that doesn't make sense to me is that God would tell anybody to go into a land and kill every man, woman, and child.
Okay.
I don't think that God would have any reason to be angry, vengeful, jealous, some attributes that are attributed to him in the Bible. I don't think that God would intentionally deceive someone. There are instances of that sort of thing in the Bible. And I could name many, many other things, but there are just so many things about the Bible that that are difficult to believe or accurate about an entity that is supposed to be all-knowing and all-powerful.
Well, now I'm going to say something very controversial, but I'm acting as the devil's advocate here. God, as the average person knows God, is completely an invention of a band of fiction writers called theologians. And they've made up God. Now, having said that, let me explain what I mean. I'm not saying that there's not perhaps God, but what we know about God is something we don't know. What we know about God is what most people know, is only what the fiction writers have written about this being. And so, as the devil's advocate on that, let me say, well, what if the Bible is 100% accurate about this being? Which, by the way, he's the first one recorded in history as having committed genocide, which is that would be the flood. So, theologians come up with all kinds of theological convolutions around these apparent foibles in the nature of God. They want us to believe that God is all love and that he's merciful and he wouldn't do these things. And yet the Bible says he did do them. So what if God, as he actually exists, is exactly as described in the Bible and the theologians have been lying to us?
I totally agree with you, and I think that that is absolutely correct. And I also believe that if we simply use our common sense, regardless of what the book says, if we just use our common sense, I believe we should realize that God cannot communicate with mankind universally through language. And that's something I think that we can easily prove to ourselves. If I tell you that God told me a story and I'm going to relate this story word for word to you just exactly like God told me, and you're supposed to pass it on through another one until we get to number 10, when the 10th one tells me the story, I won't even recognize it.
Okay.
The same is true with the written language. If I write something down and give it to you that is supposed to have come from God, and then you're supposed to go and give it to an Egyptian and have him translate it and copy it, and the Egyptian to an Israelite, and on and on and on. By the time those writings get back to me in English, I won't recognize it again. And so it's impossible, in my opinion, for God to communicate universally with mankind through language. He communicates with us, I think, through his creation.
Okay. And so, just so we know our starting point, do you think there is such a being as God?
Well, I don't, in my own mind, I don't consider it a being, not like we think in terms of a being, but I do think that there is intelligence to the universe. I think there is intelligence to this creation. We can study the laws of physics, and the laws of physics are actually pretty simple. The universe is not simple. It's extremely complex. But even an old dummy like me can understand many of the physical laws that govern the universe. We have the ability to comprehend those laws and to learn things from those laws. And those laws are very precise. And if they were altered just the least little bit, then the universe would not exist as we know it. And if you look at it and study these laws, it really appears that the universe was intentionally constructed or created so that life forms could exist therein. So I do believe that there's some type of supreme intelligence doing this. I don't think it all occurred just by accident.
Okay, so then that kind of falls in line with people who say what they think exists that we've labeled as God, they say is really sort of a cosmic consciousness of the universe.
I can accept it in those terms, yes.
All right. So then let's talk about, based on your studies and what you've put in the book, what's the story of the origin of things? How did it happen?
Well, there is an ancient text that is an Akkadian text in the old Babylonian dialect that is about 4,500 years old that we now call the creation epic. And it describes in pretty great detail the formation of our solar system and Earth. That can be found in Sitchin's book, The 12th Planet, and many people have written about that creation epic. And the interesting thing about that today, I think, is that NASA and our scientists and the best science that we have today seems to be very corroborative of those old tablets and that creation epic.
And what does it say about what happened? How did it happen?
Well, it says that initially there were three celestial bodies in our solar system: the Sun, Mercury, the little planet closest to the Sun, and then a very large watery planet called Tiamat. And that other planets, as they were formed, began to appear, and eventually the planet Nibiru, which is the planet where the Anunnaki live, came into our solar system as kind of a rogue planet, and had several moons, and some of its moons hit the planet Tiamat, creating a fissure and altered the course of Nibiru so that it orbited our Sun, and then as it passed back by Tiamat on the way back out, other moons and a bolt of electricity and so forth hit the planet and split it in two, and half of that planet then coalesced and became the Earth, and the rest of it was knocked off and became what is known today as the asteroid belt, the asteroids that are between Mars and Jupiter. In fact, it's one of the things that intrigued me initially was the fact that the Christian Bible begins with, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." The Hebrew Bible actually begins with, "In the beginning, God created the hammered-out bracelet and the earth," and the hammered-out bracelet is the asteroid belt.
And verse 2 says, "And the earth," in Hebrew it says, "and the earth became formless and void." It became that. All right, we're going to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Dr. Jack Pruitt. Dr. Pruitt, before we step any further into this, I'm curious about where you got the information that what it actually says in Hebrew is, "In the beginning, God created the," what was it, the hammered necklace or the asteroid belt?
Hammered out bracelet.
Hammered out bracelet, and the earth. Where did you get that information?
That's the Hebrew Bible.
Well, in the Hebrew Bible, that word is hashamayim, which really only just means the sky, the heavens, and the bodies that are out there.
Well, according to some linguists, including Sitchin, he says that can also be translated hammered out bracelet. I'm not a linguist.
No. Well, I think, you know, certainly it would include the hammered out bracelet, but it really just is inclusive of everything that's out there that we see when we walk out and look up into the night sky. It's just Hashamayim, is all those things out there that we see. That would include, of course, whatever is in that hammered out bracelet.
Yes, I agree with that. Of course, the other problem that I have, being I am an MD, a medical doctor, and so I had a scientific education, and our best science today says that our universe is somewhere between 13.5 and 17.5 billion years old.
Yeah.
But the Earth is about 4.5 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the initial problems that I had with the Bible was when it says, in the beginning, what are we talking about? Are we talking about when the universe began, or are we talking about when the Earth began?
And that is one of the mysteries. You know, it doesn't specify, does it?
No, and so my conclusion from that is that if the Bible is the Word of God and God is trying to instruct His children, why wouldn't He make clear those details?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and that's a good point, because if the Earth existed from the beginning of the universe, then it would have to be 13.5 to 17.5 billion years old. And it isn't. It's 4.5 billion.
Correct.
Yeah. But, you know, even in Genesis, the earth being smashed is contained there. In verse 2, it says, and the earth became, not the earth was formless and void, it became formless and void. That word became is hayah, and it doesn't mean was, it means it became formless and empty. It got smashed. And so that certainly lines up with the creation epic as you've described it for us, and as Sitchin described it.
It certainly does.
Yeah. So then those 7 days of creation, and some people think those are 24-hour days, while on the one hand anything is possible, on the other hand, the word there used for day can also be used as era. Kind of like, you know, you and me are both older guys, and we both have said at some point, well, in my day we did it this way. We're not talking about a 24-hour day. We're talking about an era of time in our lives.
That's correct. And of course, interestingly enough, the creation epic was also written on 7 tablets and kind of, in a way, coincides with the 7 days of creation, but certainly those are not 24-hour days.
So, who, in the creation epic, things are being, if you will, recreated on what today we call Earth. What does the creation epic tell us about who's doing that?
Well, you know, it puts names to Nibiru. It calls Nibiru Marduk, who was actually a son of Enki, one of the half-brothers who came to Earth originally. But I think that if you read it carefully and you understand that it was actually written only about 4,500 years ago, but the original information, it seems to me, had to have been obtained 4.5 billion years ago. The question I had was, how would anyone know the details of how our solar system were formed unless they were eyewitnesses to the events? I believe that it is quite possible that the Anunnaki were eyewitnesses to the formation of our solar system on planet Nibiru as it came into our the vicinity of Tiamat, and they actually observed what was going on. I believe that they live underground. I don't think they were on the surface, because they'd have probably all been killed had they been on the surface. But they are known that the word Anunnaki means heavenly serpent, and I believe that they are called reptilians simply because they prefer to live underground. Our reptiles can survive and live both on the surface and underground. And so I think it is quite possible that through TV monitors or whatever technology they had available, that they were actually eyewitnesses to the creation of our solar system.
Okay, so, well, that pretty much answers the question that I have written here to ask you. If you accept that the Anunnaki are a real living race of beings, intelligent beings, but the follow-up question is, do you think they still exist?
I do. And I think that their descendants certainly exist on Earth today, and I think it's quite possible that even some of the original pioneers to Earth are still here today. I believe that they have an underground civilization that is quite active and busy controlling things on the surface and running our world today.
So you think the Anunnaki are here, underground, and that they are interfering with or intervening in the affairs of mankind. Is that right?
I do. I think that we've had so many UFO sightings and stories about abductions and so forth that I doubt that anyone today really denies the fact that there are UFOs flying around our planet from time to time. But I don't think that the large majority of those come from outer space or from anywhere like that. And certainly there may be some that do. But I think by far and away the large majority of those come from underground. And I think they're the Anunnaki coming to the surface to abduct somebody and alter their genetics or do something in regards to their genetic experiment that is still ongoing today, or to look around or to do whatever they may come to the surface to do. But I do think that they do reside underground.
So do you subscribe to the so-called hollow earth theory?
I do. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, there's a pretty famous story about Admiral Byrd flying into the cave or the opening or the entrance there at the North Pole, and his plane being stopped and him giving some information that I think was deceiving, but I think there's a large amount of evidence today that that they do reside underground, and I believe they evolved underground. If you think about a planet like Sitchin describes Nibiru, if this planet has a long elliptical orbit that goes out into deep space and then returns to Earth only every 3,600 years, it would be very difficult for a life form that is anywhere similar to us to survive on such a planet on the surface. It's got to be freezing cold most of the time. And so I believe that the Anunnaki actually evolved underground where they had heat generated from the interior of the planet. And from what we know about that planet, it is the type planet that would generate heat internally. And, you know, medically, if you look at some of our genetics, for instance, if you look at our gene for albinism, I don't know how that gene could ever develop on a planet like ours where we're exposed to the sunlight all the time. I think that gene was probably developed on Nibiru and transferred to us. And there are many other medical examples of the sort, those sorts of things that just don't seem like that would be possible for the process of evolution to occur on our planet.
All right. So if the Anunnaki, at least some of them, are still here, and you use the term reptilian, you told us Anunnaki, I think, means sky serpent, is that it?
Well, they call themselves serpent people or dragon people, and of course there's all kind of symbols and symbolism that they use to deceive us. They don't look like reptilians. They look very much like we do. We were created in their image and their likeness, and that's something that I did not do a very good job in my book. I stated in the book that mankind was created by the Anunnaki, and of course that's inaccurate. What I should have done a better job of explaining that I believe that the universe and all that is in it was created by God, and therefore you and I were created by God. But I do believe that Sitchin did a very good job of proving that the Anunnaki genetically engineered a Neanderthal woman and a young Anunnaki male and combined their DNA and created Homo sapiens, you and I. And so I believe that although we were created by God, we were genetically engineered into the image and the likeness of the Anunnaki.
All right. We have to step away for a break. And when we come back, we'll pick up right there with the engineering of the human race by the Anunnaki. The title of the book is The Grandest Deception. The author is Dr. Jack Pruitt, and he is my guest this evening. A little bit later in the show, we're going to open up the telephone lines for you. That will be in the second hour, so you want to hang in there. You'll get a chance to call in with your questions or comments a little later. And we shall return right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Dr. Jack Pruitt. When we stepped away for break, Dr. Pruitt, you were explaining to us how the Anunnaki had genetically engineered us. And I think we were at the point where you were saying they had genetically engineered a Neanderthal-type woman, and that an Anunnaki male and this Neanderthal female either mated or by some type of laboratory procedure, their DNA was mixed, and Homo sapien is from that.
Yes, and let me just say that, you know, by training, I'm an obstetrician gynecologist. And so I know a little bit about genetic engineering. I know a little bit about artificial insemination and in vitro fertilization and cloning and cell fusion and all that. As a matter of fact, you mentioned earlier, Dr. Ron Paul and I were medical partners and practiced OB-GYN together for about 20 years. But when you read the Sitchin's work and you read the details of how this genetic engineering experiment was done, or this alteration was done, medically, it makes a lot of sense. And then if you compare that to Darwin's theory of evolution, Darwin was not correct in all aspects of his theory. Life on Earth, I don't believe, began as Darwin stated that it did, and our best science today doesn't agree with that either. Our best science today seems to indicate that life was seeded here or transferred here, I believe, from the moons of Nibiru that collided with Tiamat initially. Two different species of bacteria that we're aware of apparently were seeded onto the Earth. And then evolution proceeded until it got over the 4 billion years or so to the point of Neanderthal woman, and the ancient tablets go into great detail about how they took an egg and the DNA from a Neanderthal woman. And interestingly enough, they did not mix it with sperm from the Anunnaki. They mixed it with the blood from a young Anunnaki male. They also put a very special clay from South Africa, which when you study the properties of this clay, things get to be very, very interesting. It certainly was not dust. And then they mixed that also with some things called bitumens, and we don't know exactly what all that was. It was put through a series of purifying baths and some things done to the DNA. And the ancient tablets even go into detail about how this took a fairly extended period of time. It probably was not done quickly. It probably took them, my guess is, almost 10,000 years to make this all happen, because they developed some beings initially that were not satisfactory and had all kind of problems, and then they finally came up with the Adam that would be a satisfactory slave. But if you look at the medical aspects of this and then compare it to what our best science tells us today, then at least in my mind, it is extremely difficult to deny the fact that they did indeed genetically engineer Homo sapiens.
So you accept Sitchin's, I'll say his proposition of how the, or his explanation of how this happened. You accept it on a medical basis?
Yes, I do. It makes a tremendous sense medically.
Okay.
And if you look at, you know, we've searched for what has been termed the missing link between primates or hominids and Homo sapiens for a very long time. And the reason we haven't found it is because there is none. The Anunnaki bypassed that stage of evolution. I don't know whether we would have evolved into anything very similar to what we are today or not. I guess it'd be similar, but I don't think it would be anywhere close to the same thing, actually, because so much of our DNA supposedly came from the Anunnaki.
Well, I guess we could say the missing link looks like a Petri dish.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Or maybe a test tube.
Perhaps so.
Okay, so what about Nibiru? Is Nibiru still in existence?
I believe that it definitely is. And I believe that it will definitely return to the vicinity of the Earth around 3400 A.D. I believe that the last passage near here was about 200 B.C.
All right, so when it comes back through, can we expect tremendous upheavals?
It's going to be horrible. And I think, from a study of the Bible and the ancient scriptures, I believe that what happens when Nibiru returns around 3400 A.D. is that either surreptitiously or perhaps intentionally caused by the Anunnaki, that this will cause either one or many of the asteroids from the asteroid belt to be diverted towards Earth, and that there will be a huge catastrophe on Earth from it being showered by these asteroids, and that mankind will almost be totally eliminated.
All right, so what about all of these prophecies that we're hearing about 2012?
About, did you say December 21st, 2012?
Yes.
My opinion about that is that that probably corresponds with the end of the age of Pisces. We don't know exactly when the zodiac ages begin and end, but I think that it's quite possibly that the age of Pisces will end December 21st, 2012. When you then correlate that with the Bible, there's prophecy in the book of Daniel talking about the tribulation period, which is a 7-year period of time that the Antichrist is supposed to be let loose to do his thing on the earth. And at the midpoint of that, 3.5 years into it, then the Bible says that he sets up an image of himself in the wing of the temple, and then all kinds of chaos begins to occur, and there's great devastation upon the earth at that time for the next 3.5 years. The Bible calls those 3.5 years the Great Tribulation. And so I wonder whether December 21st, 2012 is the beginning of this 7-year tribulation period, or whether it's even possible that it is the midpoint, that we're already in the tribulation period, and that is the 3.5-year midpoint, and that very disastrous things will begin to occur after December 21st of next year.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back, folks, more with my guest, Dr. Jack Pruitt, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that has kept you away for the first hour, but we're glad you're here now. And we are talking this evening with Dr. Jack Pruitt. He is a medical doctor, and he is the author of a book called The Grandest Deception. It is a book that has to do with many of the things that Zechariah Sitchin has written about, and in short, basically takes things to the next step. Dr. Pruitt, in just a couple of minutes here, we're going to open the phone line and invite people to join us and participate in the show by calling in and talking with you, asking their questions, making their comments. And I must say, we actually have quite, I know that we, from our email, we have gotten quite a bit of email of people who are real fans of your book and of you. So I expect we will have quite a number of calls.
Thrilled to hear that.
Well, I hope my prediction there is accurate. We even had someone last night that called in not knowing that you were going to be on the show tonight and requested on the air that we have you on the show. So, so you've got quite a following. Your book is sort of putting earthquakes under the status quo, kind of like Sitchin's books, maybe a little bit more than Sitchin's books. Are you getting any feedback or response from the status quo scientists and status quo researchers and thinkers? Are you getting any feedback on your book from them?
I have not yet. I'm getting tremendous feedback actually from around the world. I've been shocked at the number of emails that I'm receiving, several hundred a day from all over the world. But I have not had any feedback whatsoever from the researchers.
All right. Well, I suspect you will. I did. I had three preachers that wrote to me and told me I needed to just go ahead and die and go to hell where I was from.
I've had a little bit of that, but I have been very, very surprised at how positive the response has been.
All right, I'm going to open up the telephone lines, and ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number is now on your screen if you're watching. If you're listening, here it is, 623-444-5889. If those are the Stargate coordinates to transport you from where you are to this studio, you enter that into your telephone and you'll be transported right here. Okay, let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Tony from Denver.
Hello, Tony.
Hello, Kevin.
Go ahead.
Dr. Pruitt, you have revealed to us the Bible was written by the Anunnaki, for the Anunnaki, and that Jesus was an Anunnaki. My question for you, Dr. Pruitt, would you also say that the Quran was written by the Anunnaki, and would you say that Muhammad was an Anunnaki?
I don't know about Muhammad being an Anunnaki, but I do believe that all what we consider to be scripture, whether it's the Christian Bible, the Hebrew Bible, the Quran, the Hindu sacred writings, the Buddhist sacred writings, I believe that all of those were written by the Anunnaki.
Mm-hmm. Why do you say it would be insulting to God to attribute to him the Bible?
Because it is patently absurd. I don't believe that God would tell anyone to go and kill anyone. I also do not believe that it is necessary to murder anyone. It's not necessary to murder anyone to have my sins forgiven or your sins forgiven. I think that's patently absurd. And there's to attribute to God the things that the Bible talks about, I think is an absolute insult to God and an outrage to God. All religions were formed by mankind. They weren't formed or originated by God.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been used in tremendous ways against us. I also don't believe that God would write a book that has caused millions, perhaps billions, of his children to be killed and murdered. We fought more religious wars than for any other reason. There's deaths caused from the discord and the animosity that religious teachings have given us have caused more deaths than any other reason on earth. And so I think it would be an outrage to say that God wrote a book that caused his children to slaughter each other for thousands and thousands of years. And we're still doing it today. We hadn't woke up yet.
Yeah, I can really understand where you're coming from with that. I really want to thank you for being on the show tonight, and thanks again, Kevin, for having him on.
All right.
Tony, thank you for calling in. Appreciate your comments.
And the telephone line is open. 623-444-5889. Now, remember, if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number. But I recognize that will be an international long-distance call, and those tend to be expensive. So for you, we have something called the Flash Message option. It's on the website. And you just go to my website, scroll down, you see the picture about tonight's show. Right above it is the link that says Flash Message, but you must be outside the USA and outside of Canada to use the Flash Message feature. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Dr. Pruitt, you mentioned 200 BC was the last time that Nibiru went past the Earth. Is that correct?
That's correct. Jerome, go ahead.
And you're also predicting that the next time will be around 3400 A.D., roughly. Is that correct?
That's correct. It returns about every 3,600 years.
Okay. If I recall my history, in 200 B.C., there was no catastrophes.
Let me clarify that a little bit. Becomes very interesting when you look at that date, 200 B.C., probably coincides with the beginning of the age of Pisces. If you look at our Bible, it's in two parts. The Old Testament kind of ends about that time, and so the Anunnaki were here, and they had to write a new paradigm for the age of Pisces, and that's what the New Testament is, basically. If you really look at the script of the New Testament and study it in detail, it is actually nothing more than a description of the sun moving through the zodiac during the age of Pisces. And so they wrote that paradigm for the age of Pisces. Now, I think what we're going to find after December 21st, 2012, that all of a sudden mankind is going to realize that we have been deceived and that the Bible is not about God at all, and that a new paradigm is going to be written for the age of Aquarius, because the New Testament is not going to apply anymore. I will make that prediction.
I can kind of see where you're going on that. I was looking more at physical destruction and not in those terms.
Nibiru, the only time that the planet caused tremendous destruction when it orbited the sun was 4.5 billion years ago, when the moons hit Tiamat and all that occurred. And then the only other time was about 11,000 B.C. when it caused the chaos and the flood to occur. But the rest of the passages from 11,000 B.C. Until the one that's going to occur in 3400 A.D., have been fairly quiet. They haven't caused any catastrophes or problems.
Mm. Oh, okay. I agree with that 11,000 B.C. date, and I see what you're saying with the 4.5 million years or whatever that date was. Another question. You said Admiral Byrd was deceived by the Anunnaki. Specifically, how was he deceived?
Good question.
Yeah, it is a very good question. My understanding is that the information that was given to Admiral Byrd were that the beings who were residing underground here on planet Earth were benevolent beings, benevolent guardians of our planet. I personally do not believe that. I believe that was the Anunnaki, again, deceiving Admiral Byrd, telling him that they were benevolent and they were going to take care of us and do very good things for us. But I think it's quite evident today that they have not been very benevolent.
I thought there was some type of battle where the American fleet visited that area but then turned around because they thought the better of it.
I'm not familiar with that. I do know, at least according to the story about Admiral Byrd, that he was turned around and was not allowed to go on into the interior and see what was actually there.
Jerome, I think what you're referring to, is Operation High Jump. But that was at the Antarctic, which was on the South Pole.
Okay, Kevin.
I believe that there is evidence that there are entranceways to the interior of the Earth at both poles. And we've got numerous videos of spacecraft, UFOs, that are coming up out of the water or coming up out of a mountain somewhere. So I think they have numerous ways to enter and exit.
Okay. Jerome, I want to thank you for the call. Interesting questions. I had not thought about that. How did they deceive Byrd? The telephone lines are open, 623-444-5889. Now, Dr. Pruitt, you said they deceived him by making him think they are benevolent. So that would indicate you think the Anunnaki are anything but benevolent. Am I correct?
That is absolutely correct.
So you think these guys are some really bad actors, huh?
I think they're horrible. And I think that we have, again, a tremendous amount of medical evidence to prove that. Again, if you look at the process of evolution, we talk about evolution being a process of natural selection and survival of the fittest. Then, if that is so, and it is, then all living organisms should be improved medically, health-wise. We should live longer, be stronger, be better as the years go by. Generation after generation should improve. But if you look at mankind, the health of mankind today, and you look at old literature, medical literature, we have things today like Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, all kind of autoimmune diseases, on and on and on and on, all different kinds of cancers, many, many, many health problems that just would not occur during the process of evolution. And I believe that's because the Anunnaki are genetically engineering our immune systems and interfering with our genetics. I believe that they're putting all kind of things in our atmosphere, in our food, in our water. I believe that the pharmaceutical industry is producing all kind of drugs that we doctors prescribe that may improve the ailment that we prescribe them for, but I believe they also do other things that are extremely harmful to mankind. And so, in my opinion, there's tremendous evidence that the Anunnaki are not benevolent. And based on the Bible again, I believe that their intent and their goal as far as this engineering experiment is concerned is to turn mankind into a dumbed-down biological robot. They still want the slaves to do their work, but they don't want us to be, like Enlil said before the flood, they don't like us to be noisy and boisterous and rebellious and cause them problems in any way. And so I think they're working very hard to crush our spirit and to actually remove the spirit from Homo sapiens, if that's possible. But certainly to dumb us down and to make us emotionless, sexless, and just a biological robot that will do the work that they want done.
Well, it would appear they have Congress in their pocket then. Okay, caller. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Haya from Victoria, Vancouver Island.
Hello, Haya.
Hi. Dr. Pruitt, I've always been curious, so I never got an answer that I really accepted from medical science. Where does negative blood type come from? Do you know?
Yes, I do. You're talking about what we call the Rh negative factor?
That's right.
Okay. Well, actually, that is not a negative factor. If someone's blood type is called Rh negative, that doesn't mean that they have a negative factor. That just means that the Rh positive factor is not present in their blood.
Okay, I understand that, but why do Rh negative parents or mothers have problems having children? I'm a negative myself, and I've had two children, both with major complications, myself in particular.
I understand. Basically and simplistically, a quick answer to your question is that if the baby is also Rh negative, there's no problem. You can have as many Rh negative babies as you want. But if the baby happens to be Rh positive, your blood mixes to a certain degree with the baby's blood, and the baby's blood mixes to a certain degree with your blood. So mm-hmm. when the Rh positive blood from the baby comes into your system, that is a foreign antibody. That is a foreign factor in your bloodstream, so you produce antibodies against that Rh positive factor. Those antibodies that you produce then recross the placenta and go into the baby, and then the baby has antibodies against its own blood. And so
I understand
very, very
that completely. I understand what you're saying, but what I'm saying is, there's only 7% of world population that has negative blood type. What my question is where did it come from? How did it develop? You know, why was it there when most people are positive?
There's no Rh negative factor. It didn't come. There's no such thing. When we say you're Rh negative, it just means that you do not possess the positive factor.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did that happen?
Yeah, how did it happen?
How did it happen that you just did not receive that factor?
No, how did it happen?
That only 7% of world population only has that factor.
Well, if you look at all genetic traits, there are all kind of genes for all kind of things. Now, each of us do not inherit all of those genetic traits. We inherit some of them. And so the Rh positive factor is just a gene that is transcribed most of the time, but not all the time.
Okay, that's interesting, yeah. I understand that. I was looking for where the origins originate from, you know, only because of mass population being on a positive note.
As far as our blood types, I mean, we have to assume, I think, that the Anunnaki and ape woman or Neanderthal woman had similar blood types, and so basically we inherited our blood types and our blood traits from them.
Yeah, and reading Sitchin's work, I've got all his books, and I've also got the book on Enki and Eliel, and I've kept up on, you know, other people that have also researched the area. But one thing that comes across, I mean, even in the Haftorah, which is the part of the Old Testament, what it basically says is when the Elohim came down and they created two types of men. First one didn't work out and they kind of threw them out. And it states because they couldn't produce children. And then the second lot they created that could produce children. Now, have you noticed that when you've done some of your research and your reading of the Old Testament?
Well, yeah, the ancient Sumerian text and Sitchin's work explains that the first Adam that they created about 290,000 years ago, and that Adam was sterile. And that Adam and Eve that they produced, actually they took the DNA from that Adam after they had finally perfected the process. They took the DNA from that Adam, and 14 Anunnaki females volunteered to be birth goddesses. They then engineered that DNA from that Adam and created 7 male and 7 female embryos, and these were placed into the wombs of these 14 volunteers, and so they produced 14 slaves in some period of time. Then, you know, they repeated the process several times, but what actually happened was, through this process, they simply could not create slaves fast enough. It doesn't ever tell us how many times those birth goddesses volunteered to go through that process, but being an obstetrician gynecologist, I've delivered over 5,000 babies, and I've had many of those women tell me they would not go through that process again. So they may have volunteered to do it 2 or 3 times, I don't know, but they couldn't make enough slaves. They actually, those slaves that were created who were sterile did work for the Anunnaki for 140-some-odd thousand years, and then finally about 110,000 years ago, which is where our story of the serpent and Adam and Eve come from, they just simply did some more genetic engineering and made Adam and Eve, or Homo sapiens, fertile so that they could procreate, just so they could make slaves quicker. And then, of course, it turned out that we started multiplying like rabbits to the Anunnaki and became a problem. But Homo sapiens, as we know today, again, that fits very well with our scientific best science, that we've been on Earth in our present form able to procreate for about 110,000 years or so.
All right. Hiya, thank you for the call. We have to run because we have a break coming up. I appreciate it. Good information, good questions. When we come back from this break, we will reopen the telephone lines so that you can call in and talk with Dr. Jack Pruitt. If you have a question or a comment, please feel free to call and talk. Whether you agree or disagree, either way, we would like to hear from you. There's a caller now. Caller, you hang on. We'll get you first up when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this.
And you are smart because you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Jack Pruitt, and we have the telephone lines open at 623-444-5889. We do have a caller on hold, and we're going to that caller in just a second. Let me remind those of you who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, we understand that international long-distance calls are expensive, or they can be, depending on where you are. We would love to hear from you. If you want to call us, we would love to take your call and invite you to do so. But if you don't want to spend all that money on an international long-distance call, you can still participate in the show by sending me a flash message. Just go to the website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above it is a link that says flash message. You can use that to communicate with us. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Jeff, this is Mike Kevin from Tennessee.
Okay, Mike.
Dr. Pruitt, when they engineered Homo sapiens about 110,000 years ago, it wasn't it Enki that donated the gene that gave man the ability to breed?
The texts really don't tell us exactly how they did that. Again, it was a matter of doing some genetic engineering to the DNA, obviously, that was already present in the sterile slaves that they had created. But at least I'm not familiar with exactly how they gave us the ability to procreate. But obviously it may have been this, a matter of just giving us an X and Y chromosome and doing some things like that. But I don't know.
I think that it was said that Enlil, who was the ruler of the earth at that time, had wanted the slaves sterile, basically. But that Enki had decided that he was going to, at that time, give of himself his own chromosome to help us be able to breed, because he had an affinity for man. He liked it.
Well, we were his creation, of course. He was the great scientist, and I do believe that when the Bible talks about the serpent doing something, deceiving Adam and Eve, that Enki is the serpent they were talking about, and that Enki is certainly the one who did the genetic engineering to give mankind the ability to procreate. And it is true that this was just another part of the feuding and disagreement between he and Enlil. Enlil did not want him to do that.
Right, and when he found out that Enki had done, wasn't he enraged?
He was enraged. He was enraged when he found out that Enki had told us how to survive the flood. I personally believe that Noah was the son of Enki. I believe that there's very good evidence to show that actually the Sumerian tablets call him Zeusudra, but that Zeusudra, the biblical Noah, was actually the offspring of Enki and a human female. And that's why Enki had compassion for him and a fondness for that son of his, and basically instructed him upon how to build a submersible boat or a submarine. He also told him to gather seeds and to gather, showed him or did for him to gather eggs and sperm from various animals and to store them on the submarine, and reconstituted those after the water subsided.
All right, Mike. Thank you very much for the call. Interesting questions. The telephone lines are open, and we would love to hear from you if you have a question or comment for our guest this evening, Dr. Jack Pruitt, 623-444-5889. Earlier, in response to a caller and a comment you made in answering the caller, I asked, I said, it appears you think these Anunnaki are bad actors. And you said that, yes, and there is evidence of that medically. Share some of that with us. What are we talking about? Evidence that they are bad actors and not benevolent.
Well, again, I think that it is the Anunnaki underground are their descendants. The Bible talks about the Nephilim, who are the Anunnaki, cohabiting with the daughters of men and having children, and these were the great children of renown, according to Genesis. But the descendants of these beings on Earth today are the ones who are basically the establishment, the people who are running the world. But I believe that my personal belief is that they're also being deceived by the Anunnaki in certain ways. But nevertheless, either the Anunnaki themselves from underground or their descendants are controlling things. They're medically, the things that are happening in our world today just should not be happening according to the process of evolution and the process of natural, if natural selection and the survival of the fittest, so to speak, occurs over thousands of years, then that is actually God's way. The process of evolution is actually God's way of improving all living organisms. We get healthier, we get better, we get stronger, etc., through the process of evolution. But that's not what we see on our world, in our world today. We see mankind developing all kinds of new illnesses, new diseases, new problems. And the reason that we're developing those problems is because of the genetic engineering that the Anunnaki are doing, and they do that in numerous different ways. They do that by putting things in our atmosphere, in our food, in our water, in our medications, the pharmaceutical industry, and that sort of thing.
Okay, let me play the devil's advocate again. Let's say that Darwin's theory was all wet from the start, and therefore does not provide us a standard against which to measure. We'll say that Darwin's theory, for the sake of argument, was flawed, fatally flawed from the beginning, as is evidenced by the fact that there are no fossils that show trans-species mutation. We have no trans-species fossils. We do see changes within species lines. We see a certain type of lizard that once was very, very big and now it's very small. We see horses that were very small but now they're very big. But we don't see any fossils that cross the species lines. So we'll use that as evidence to say that Darwin's theory of evolution was wet from the start and was not valid, and therefore we can't judge against it. In a case like that, when I say judge against it, I mean we can't measure anything against it as a standard. So when we look at it like that, then all of these weird things that are happening in human health today would not necessarily indicate someone altering our genetics, but perhaps could indicate that it's us altering our genetics by loading up the atmosphere with electromagnetic frequencies and all our cell phones and having the government spray us every day with aerosols from hell, and that would be chemtrails, and all the additives that are in our food, all the pharmaceuticals, etc. So what would you say about that?
Well, again, I think that if we really go into detail, I think our best science indicates that Darwin's theory was true and was accurate, except for the fact that life didn't begin where he said, and Homo sapiens was not created the way he said. But that can be debatable. I certainly agree with you, though, that I do think that we do a lot of harmful things to ourselves as well. We do harmful things to our atmosphere. We do do harmful things to our bodies. And so I'm not saying that it's all totally 100% because of the Anunnaki. I think it is a combination of what they do to us and what we do to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, lived.
You know, it's interesting if you look at Genesis. If you look at Genesis and the days of creation, and you look at how it's described, I'd have to open the Bible and look, but about day four and day five, that pretty accurately describes the process of evolution.
Well, certainly the things that appeared on Earth in those 7 days, or actually the 6 days, nothing appeared on the seventh day. But in the six days, the things that appeared on Earth appeared pretty much in the order that Darwin would have outlined.
Yeah,
and it also says that all animal life, it says in Genesis, all animal life began in the sea. It began in the water.
Right.
That's not supposition. It says that it did.
Yeah,
okay.
That's very much in agreement with evolution.
Now, if evolution happens, but if it's happening in a modified way, because I have said, I'm not saying there's no evolution. I'm saying Darwin is dead. And I think he's dead in the water. I think he's dead from Jump Street, his theory. But, and here's my variation. If evolution happens within species lines, but nothing crosses species lines, that would indicate that life was seeded here within species lines.
Yes.
And I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that within the species lines there is evolution. But and there's modification and variation, but I have a real problem with anything crossing the species line to become something it wasn't, because we have no fossil evidence of it.
Well,
but
perhaps you're aware of some evidence that I'm not aware of, but I also know of no evidence to indicate that different species were seeded here.
Well, what I'm saying is that what was seeded here would have been of a variation or a variety, so that as it evolved, it evolved, if you will, within certain species lines. In other words, you had, if you think of all the things, well, we have a break taking over. I'll pick up there when we come back, and I'll explain what I think the variation is. Okay, we'll be back with Dr. Jack Pruitt after this, so be sure you hang in there and come back on the other side of this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest, Dr. Jack Pruitt, and we have a flash message that we've got to get to here before the end of the show, but I want to explain what I'm talking about. If we think chemically and just use chemistry as an example, hydrogen and oxygen can combine in a variety of ways, but there's not a way in which hydrogen and oxygen can combine that will equal HCl. So HCl can combine in various ways, or hydrogen and chlorine can combine in various ways, but there's not a way that it can combine that will equal H2O. So there are certain lines within which things can evolve. That's what I'm talking about. So that whatever was seeded here can combine with other things in certain ways to produce the species. But once the species is underway, it can't combine in ways that take it outside of its species line, because it's
all
building.
Right. I can agree with that. Yeah.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying now, and you know, in my mind at least, when I envision this horrible collision between Nibiru and Tiamat, that whatever was seeded here had to be something that was living in water. I can see how the waters of Nibiru could mix with the waters of Tiamat, and some organisms survive that.
Sure.
But I certainly can't see how any kind of very advanced life form could survive that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But this is why the idea of evolution I don't have a problem with. But the Darwinian theory of it, I have a problem with, because it takes it outside of its own building blocks. And,
and I agree with you on that. I do agree that we don't have, once a species is established, then I do not think there's any evolution between species. I agree.
Yeah.
But we can, of course, cross hybrids. We can breed a horse and a donkey and get a mule.
Yeah, and almost all hybrids turn out to be sterile.
Yeah, and that's what we were initially.
Yeah.
We were a hybrid between an Anunnaki and a Neanderthal, and we were sterile.
All right, I want to get to this flash message from Mexico. This is from Humberto de País México. Let me say thank you for the flash message, Humberto. And he wants me to ask you this question. Do you think that the rare solar eclipse of the sun that occurred in 556 BC was produced by Nibiru? If so, then why are so many people worried about Nibiru's comeback?
No, I do not think that it was produced by Nibiru, although perhaps that is possible. What we do know is about that same time, between the years of 610 to 560 BC, there was a mass exodus of the Anunnaki from planet Earth. Most of the original pioneers did leave and go back to Nibiru at that time. I don't think they went directly from Earth to planet Nibiru. I think they went to their way station on Mars and then went on from Mars to Nibiru. But Nibiru was in the vicinity of Earth at that time, and so that is a possibility.
Why was there a mass exodus at that time?
Well, my opinion is they'd been here 450,000 years approximately by that time. They had done great things. They had achieved marvelous things. They had amassed tons of gold, and that was their intent originally, was to acquire gold. And I think they hauled a bunch of it off at that time. I think the old folks, the Anunnaki, do age and they get old and they die. And I think the original pioneers had had enough, and they were ready to go home and turn it over to the kids and grandkids. I don't think they abandoned a project that they had put so much into and achieved so much. I think they stake their claim to planet Earth, and that they consider Earth their possession and mankind their possession. And I don't think they abandoned that by any means, but I do think the old folks were ready to go home.
And so you said that Nibiru came through our solar system at about 200 BC. So it was getting fairly close to our solar system in 500 or so BC.
Yeah, we don't know exactly how long it takes, say, from the time it enters our solar system until the time that it exits our solar system again. But the estimates are between 300 and 600 years, and I think that's pretty accurate.
We have had on this show, we have had a guest that told us that there are just mountains of gold on Mars. And this guest happens to be one of the leading scientists in this country. And I shared that with someone else who was talking about the Anunnaki going to Mars, and he said, well, it's quite possible that over all those tens of thousands of years that they were mining gold here, that they were running shuttle trips to Mars to store it.
Well, that's I hadn't even thought about that they might have left it on Mars, but that's quite possible. Certainly, we have historical evidence that King Solomon amassed huge amounts of gold. The Aztecs did, the Incas did, the Perus did. There's an interesting comment in one of the old texts talking about King Midas, who was traveling through Egypt, and he said there's more gold in Egypt than there is dirt. And so they amassed tremendous amounts of gold, and all of that gold could not just disappear. It had to go somewhere. It either went underground, it went to Mars, or it went to Nibiru. If there's evidence that it went to Mars, I can certainly agree with that. The other interesting thing, when you read the Bible and you read the book of Revelation, the Revelation says that, I don't know how we got the idea that God is supposed to spend eternity with us in heaven. The Revelation says God is going to build his dwelling on earth and reside with mankind on earth in New Jerusalem. And then it goes on to describe New Jerusalem as being a city, a cube, that's actually 1,500 miles long, 1,500 miles wide, and 1,500 miles high, and states that it is made of pure gold, and the streets are pure gold. So it will take a lot of gold to build a city that size, and I personally believe that New Jerusalem will be built underground in the center of the earth somewhere.
All right. Dr. Jack Pruitt, author of The Grandest Deception. If you want to take a look at that book and get some more information about it, you need to click his picture at my website, or you can just go to thegrandestdeception.com. Thegrandestdeception.com. So if you can't remember that, go to my website, click his picture. It'll take you to his website, or you can just type that into your browser, thegrandestdeception.com. Dr. Pruitt, thank you for being with us this evening.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith.
All right. Stay on the line with me for just a moment as I bring this flight of the KSS Starship in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, another earth shaker for the status quo and for the establishment. Whether you think he's right or think he's wrong, at least you're thinking. And I invite you to get his book and think some more. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.